Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe and I'm joined today by my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at the verdict just handed down by the Presidential Election Petitions Court led by Justice Haruna Zamani in Abuja. There are so many different elements to this judgment, and we're going to try to get to some of them. I feel that we're going to ultimately do several episodes on this judicial, what some people are calling a judicial coup against Nigerians. So we welcome you to this very sad, I would say, day for the judiciary in Nigeria. Before we get into the substantive ruling by this 5-person panel of judges, I want to comment on the length of it. So this judgment, I think, began about 9 a.m. in Nigerian time. And by the time it was concluded, it was past 10 p.m. And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I suspect that this might hold the record for a judicial ruling in the annals of Nigerian jurisprudence. It struck me that these justices who examined petitions that call to question the licitness of Bola Ahmed Tinubu's victory in the February 25 presidential elections, that the justices seem to get into the minutiae of all the claims. And in the end, it struck me that perhaps the justices believe that the breadth and the length of their judgment was going to compensate for the absurdity of some of their central findings, essentially. And I think that one of the most telling moments in the proceedings was to see a lot of the lawyers, a lot of the journalists, reporters in the court, and a lot of just the spectators who had gone to hear the hearing, just seeing them sleep. So it's as if the justices, very circuitous, dodgy verdict, put too many people to sleep. It was such a low day to see justices clearly proclaiming something that was, on the face of it, absurd. One of the claims that these justices made, I don't even think that if INEC were to write the judgment, that INEC would have been as kind to the Electoral Commission as the justices were. INEC had clearly stated before the election that they were going to use the Beavers system. INEC had clearly said that all the polling unit results will be electronically transmitted in real time. INEC did that in most of the senatorial elections, in the House of Reps elections, but failed, curiously, to do the same thing when it came to the presidential elections that were held on the same day. All right? And somehow, Justice Haruna, Zamani, and co. made excuses for INEC. They said, oh, that INEC was not bound to use a system that INEC was bound to use by the Electoral Act. They also said that, well, INEC decided not to use this system because the system was susceptible to being hacked. INEC did not canvass that argument in court, as far as I recall. So this was the judiciary, a shameless assemblage of five justices, alleged justices, who were now making up an excuse for INEC. So this is a judgment which, again, I have to underscore that I'm not a lawyer by training, but there are certain things that will make certain illogicalities that will be apparent even to a layman. So the justices never addressed the fact that INEC refused to provide to the petitioners the documents that they requested, okay, that they demanded, which they had a right to, in order to pursue their case. INEC was slow walking a lot of those documents because they knew that those documents did not hold up to what happened in polling booths. So in today's judgment, the panel rejected Peter Obi's Labour Party, Peter Obi and his political party, Labour, called a total of 13 witnesses. The justices claimed that they disregarded 10 of them, allegedly because they produced their written statement and their data after the 21-day period for such provision. Atiku called, I think, 27 witnesses. The same panel of judges said they disregarded 15 of them. So if people are wondering how the justices came to this absurd judgment that the election, which Nigerians witnessed, which the international community witnessed, an election that was marked by open fraud, by INEC's violation of the Electoral Act that stated how the election was to be conducted and transmitted, an election marked by political violence, massive thumbprinting. Here were the justices saying the usual thing, that the petitioners did not prove their case, that their case was unmeritorious, as they said. And you saw the justices almost feel a duty not only to reject the petitions, but to denigrate the petitioners, to speak to them as if they were enemies of the judiciary itself. It was such a shameful, it was such a shameful moment. I was so ashamed. And you saw also the way that the justices were speaking. Let's even go to that level, okay? You will think that these were some mechanics. You know, in fact, it's an insult to mechanics. The way they were reading their judgment, it was as if, almost as if they didn't write the judgment. You know, some of them, not all of them, in fairness. But, wow, it is a day of shame. The judiciary tarnished its image today. And to think that if they spoke for 13 hours or so, then Nigerians are going to say, what erudition, what scrutiny, and what, you know, care went into the writing of the judgment. No, the judgment was, as I put on Twitter, this was a case of five members of the Nigerian judiciary spending whose age is in question, whose criminal record is in question, whose academic career is in question, that this man was legitimately elected president of Nigeria. Shame on you, Justice Haruna Zamani. Shame on you and your colleagues. You have whatever it is that led you to this judgment, okay? You have tarred your names. You have rubbished your names and the names of your posterity going forward. I have no words. It was shame incorporated. Those are my opening thoughts.
I mean, it was expected, yeah. Unpredictable, and expected, unexpected. And predictable, and even more predictable. So, it's not getting here. It's not a surprise, right? So, it's maybe the manner is always interesting. The drama, soap opera ish, kind of. So, maybe to some degree, but yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I have some experience with Nigerian courts, yeah, even though technically, I studied law at the University of London, so not in Nigeria. But I have a lot of family members, including my mom, that practice law in Nigeria. So it was interesting. 12-hour judgment. You see something new pretty much every instant, and they decided to give a 12-hour judgment. I think it was very Nigerian-esque, pretty much. it's kind of like the Guinness Book of World Records. Everybody wants to break it. So
yeah,
it's what you'd expect from Nigerians. It's that kind of thing you'd expect, pretty much. I mean, you could take it for what it is. You could have tougher questions about why these kind of things happen all the time. They're just different ways to take a look at it. It's never comfortable to look at the truth and take a harder look at the reality of why these things happen. But yeah, different ways to look at it. But it's just like this scenario of what's likely to happen. And if you, hopefully they do go to the Supreme Court, it's likely the scenario of the same thing that's likely to happen. So, I mean, we could say maybe Africa is going through, I was watching Sri Lanka that has a lot of social affinity with Africa and the Caribbean black countries, like Caribbean countries and co. They were showing their president also, they have to carry him out of the car as well. And, you know, it's, look, there were all kinds of ethnic groups in the world. There are all kinds of people. Let me put it like this. I was listening to some people. People like to hear, if we say Jamaicans are great runners, people want to hear that. Yes, Jamaicans are great runners. If you say black people, no matter where they are, good at athletic sports, largely, not every black person and not every sport, right? You say, yeah, I want to hear that. Doesn't matter whether it's East Africans that are great at running or West Africans that are great at this thing. If you say, you know, you give some of these culturally, black people have a good edge in culture. Mm-hmm. They do a lot of good cultural stuff. People want to hear that. Mm-hmm. But when you say that there has been colonialism and all these things, and yes, it's part of the problem. But if you were colonized with other countries, and other countries like America itself was colonized, how much of an excuse can you keep giving yourself? Singapore was colonized, America was a colony, mm-hmm. actual colony, written in the colonists. How much of an excuse can you keep giving yourself? So if you say empathically, as an African myself, when you say these things keep happening around the continent, and there's no African country that, maybe the best is maybe Botswana. Mm-hmm. And even there has a large white influence still. But, and you say in this era, at this time, you keep getting these kind of things. You can go deeper into it and ask all those questions. People don't like the, mm-hmm. Truth is the truth. Reality is the reality. It's tough out there. It's one thing if, like, for instance, if I take a Rwanda, for instance, that has serious political problems, but Paul Kagame is performing reasonably well. Now, you could say, well, you like his performance. The only question I'd always ask is, you have a guy who is not propping up institutions that can outlive him.
Yeah, that's right.
So we've seen this drama in Africa, in black countries, mm-hmm. where somebody's performing on the margins and to some degree, and they are not. And again, a lot of Western societies, which I liked when Viktor Orban was having an interview with Tucker Carlson, where he talked about made a good point about that. A lot of Western societies, the primordial thing, the prime thing for them is freedom. A lot of other societies, no, people don't care about that. Mm-hmm. Freedom is not, and to me, in African societies, freedom isn't even now are you free? You're free to be what? Hungry, starving, largely. If you are financially okay, you have all kinds of people. Like, you're free to be what? To enjoy what exactly? What, even when you are wealthy, whether you want to say the wealth is legitimate, which is always a question, even to all the businessmen in Nigeria, how corrupt, how much they contribute to destroying the system. But let's say even with the businessmen, forget about the politicians, put them on one side. How wealthy are you? You know, how? Mm-hmm. I was listening to Daily Faro to me, and I was talking about the first time he went to Obasanjo's farms, which is a massive sprawling farm, and he had a gift of a, I think it's a lion or a lion, I believe it's a lion. And even in his farm, where he could have constructed such a wide area for this thing to roam around, Obasanjo constructed the smallest cage you could find to put the lion inside. It's like, we could sit down and say, okay, it's Obasanjo, but it's across the board. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could have more difficult question, or you could just sit down and say, okay, this is what's going to happen. Like I've said before, the moment you declare Tinubu the winner, you go and spray perfume around it. America will find a way to walk with him at arm's length.
Absolutely.
Other countries will find a way to walk with him at arm's length. Possible deniability. Mm-hmm. Because they also are not... Western societies and white societies are great at innovation, answering tougher questions, generally. Yeah. You can have it all. It's a fantastic book I read, and I still always have a copy of the book. It's called The Sports Gene. So David Remnick, I think, he restricted it to talking about sports. And, you say some of these things, like I said before, it ends up being, oh, you're trying to say, no, nobody's trying to say anybody's better than the next person. But it's sweet to hear some things. It's not sweet to hear other things, right? it's not by accident that Germans and Englishmen and a lot of these Germanic tribes are good at some of these thought processes, some of these arts, some of these things. But you, people would like to hear that, well, black people are great athletes, or the NBA is 70% black. People like that, right? They love that. It's enjoyable, you know. But when it comes to the more difficult, and again, it doesn't mean one person is, one group is better than the other. It doesn't mean there's not a path forward. The NBA is 70% black, but there are white guys that are great in the NBA. There are white guys that are great in the arts, in music. You know, you could say rap is a black a musical art form, poetry slash music art form. But to me, some of the best rappers in history, whether it's Cypress Hill, whether it's Eminem, you have other people that have come through and succeeded in that genre. Or some of the new guys now, to listen to like Tom McDonald and a whole bunch of others. So, but those are the tougher questions. The reality of what we're seeing is just, it's just a predictable system that the party in power was going to perpetuate themselves in power. I personally was, I slept, I think, like an hour and a half in the Supreme Court judge's official residence when I was in Niger. That's a whole different story, but you can see, I didn't need to sleep there for an hour and a half to know where this was headed. When I was in the compound when I came back, and I slept in there for like an hour, and I was there for like 3 hours. I think I slept in there while we were renovating the house or whatever. But I didn't, even if I never went there, it doesn't matter. It's, you know where it's going to. I didn't, it gave me some realization, but it's not any realization that I didn't really know by seeing it. So you already know where this is headed. Mm-hmm. You know the likely outcomes is you need, you're at the point where the system is not working. Mm-hmm. It's not even working for the people that are there. And how do we know? Even they themselves don't use the system. Their kids don't go there. They have a headache. They're out of the country. You need to see some of the houses people live in. It's like it's a just, zoo.
Yeah, you know, it's just so, like Judge, I just read, I think, a report that Judge Akume, who was former governor in Benue State, who is one of Tinubu's aides, is off to some foreign hospital because he's ill. All right. The governor of Ondo State, Kere Dolu, has been was out of the country. I don't know if he's returned to Nigeria. And so, just as you said, we have a situation where a Tinubu comes out and says, "Emi Lokon, it's his turn to be president." All right. It is not because the man has any particular vision for transforming Nigeria. It is not because the man also has a strategy for convincing Nigerians about the soundness of his vision so that they will buy in. No, it is simply that he has the resources to buy INEC, to buy political thugs, to buy the judiciary, and to buy other politicians. Okay? So he gets into office in a transparently fraudulent, illegitimate manner. Okay? And then he's using every lever of the state. You know, the military will occasionally issue a statement saying, if you're not loyal to the president, you should leave the military, right? When in fact you should not be loyal to a person, you should be loyal to a country. And if you're a military officer and you see that the president is acting in an illicit manner, it's actually your duty to be loyal to your country over the president. Okay? So we now have a situation where as happens in Nigeria, somebody basically snatches power. And Tinubu, when he went to London, was telling his supporters, he said, you know, snatch power, run with it, you know, do whatever you have to do. And really, that's the playbook that he used, right, in the election. And then once he gets there, again and again, he now has access to the resources of the country. and it can use this to buy every level of state power. You know, whether it's with the palliative that he took a loan to extend to top politicians in Nigeria and to insult the vast majority of Nigerians who are feeling the pinch of the disastrous economic policies pursued by his predecessor and continued by himself, you know? So again and again, you see the same playbook. So when a few days ago, the announcement came out that the judgment will be given, okay, on Wednesday, then there came a series of announcements, threats by the DSS, Department of State Security, that they will, you know, clamp down on any protests and so on and so forth. And so you already knew, because the truth was that if they had nullified Tinubu's so-called election, ostensible election, there would be nothing but celebration in Nigeria. Now, I'm sure that there are some people celebrating, but I can tell you that it's a minority of Nigerians who are celebrating this impunity that the justices delivered. And I think that in their depraved minds, the justices told themselves that if we read a long judgment over 12 hours, then people will think that we're erudite men of the bench, or, you know, people of the bench. You know, people will think that we looked exhaustively at the evidence and we came up with what one of the justices or several of them said was, I'm of the considered opinion, the considered judgment. There's nothing considered about it. If there's a consideration, it's a consideration that is outside the normal criteria of the law. Perhaps there are, as they constantly inspire Nigerians to suspect, and as we have established in the past, there is inducement, okay, that drives this kind of judgment. One has no proof, but this judgment was so patently absurd that there is nothing else that explains it other than that a fix was in, you know, from the very beginning, by the way that Tinubu declared that it was his turn to be president of Nigeria, by the way that INEC broke all the rules. It was as if everybody understood, just do it. And we're going to have every lever of society, of the state, sort of back us up, you know? But I tell you something. It's not going to end well. I'm not saying that Tinubu is not going to enjoy 4 years of his administration, of this illicitly acquired administration. And by the way, I don't think I'm ever going to call him President Tinubu, because I do know that he did not win the 2023 elections, regardless of the stupidity that the justices gave to us as a judgment. So I'm not going to call Tinubu my president. He isn't my president. But this kind of judgment, which then retrospectively validates an earlier fraudulent activity in February, is going to continue to increase the violence quotient in our elections, because people know that all you need to do is steal it, you know, use thugs to seize it, okay? Use the military, use the police, use the DSS, okay? Harass people, harass your political opponents, harass voters, okay, who are not there to vote for you, harass people who belong to a different ethnicity, people who belong to a different religion, just drive them away so they won't vote. And that once you are installed in office, you can use the resources, either of a state or of the nation, to affirm an illegality. So all it's going to do is that in future elections, people are going to be incentivized to do the same thing that Tinubu did. You know, I believe, you know, it's really, I'm sure that you've seen the thing that is going around where a mother, I think I'd like to read it. A mother had said to, hold on, had said to the child, you know, if you give me a second, I'll find it. Yeah, so, you know, so there's this, the scandal awaiting Nigeria and the judiciary, if the judiciary fails. So a mother says to the son, my son, whatever you do, make sure you, one, don't tell lies, two, don't traffic drugs, three, say the truth always, four, don't forge documents, five, never steal public funds or properties, six, don't engage in bribery and corruption, and seven, never claim that you attended a school you did not. So the kid says to the mom, but mom, how then can I become Nigeria's president in future? We have the Tinubu playbook right there. This is a summary of what we know of President Tinubu. Okay. How can we go from a president in Muhammadu Buhari who could not produce his school certificate? Okay. To one whose name we don't know. Okay. I mean, if anybody swears that Bola Ahmed Tinubu is actually Bola Ahmed Tinubu, was born and given the name Bola Ahmed Tinubu, you may or may not be right. Okay? If you say that Bola Ahmed Tinubu went to a certain elementary school, a certain secondary school, that he attended Chicago State University at the time, within this period that he said he attended it, you may get it wrong. If you said that Bola Ahmed Tinubu was not a criminal, was not involved in drug dealing, you may or not get it right. You know? So this is a man, as I said in my last column, the search for the real Tinubu is not going to be resolved by this judgment. The justices, and that's part of the absurdity, that the justices will look at the history of this unknown person, okay? All these unknowns about him, which translate into the unknowns of the election, which turns into the violations by INEC of the electoral law, which despite the inane argument of the judges, the electoral law stated that beavers must be used and that there must be electronic transmission of results. Okay? INEC didn't do any of that. And so the justices, what they did is they basically handicapped Atiku and Peter Obi by saying, in Atiku's case, 15 of your 27 witnesses would not count. And so the documents they provided were not even going to look at them. To Obi, 10 out of 13 witnesses are just scrubbed, erased from the record, you know, and the justices want us to take them seriously. It's because things are getting so difficult in Nigeria that we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how much longer young people are going to take it. A lot of young people who can are leaving the country. Okay. Those who cannot, staying in the country, those who don't have jobs, some of them are enduring, living excruciating lives, and some of them have taken to crimes. We don't know how Nigeria is going to end up in another few months or a year, okay? And these justices wasted 12 hours of a nation's time thinking that they are showing erudition. They tainted themselves today.
Well, it's expected. It's whatever it is, the continuously moving train. I don't know what's going to happen moving forward. I don't think it's going to. I don't think it's. I don't know. I feel like somebody might have bought more than they want, really, but I really don't know. I just think the indices are not good in terms of what's happening in the country, the way things are, the likelihood. Because Nigeria is such a conglomerate of a place where nobody has just been able to just sit down there. And even if you could, I don't know if you could, you probably can, but I think you need to continuously execute people, citizens. That's the only way. If you want to maintain, Abacha was probably the closest, and he was very, he was good at taking people out in all kinds of ways and manners, and was getting ramping it up before he passed. So you probably have to do, surely in this era, you probably have to do a lot more than Abacha, I'd guess.
I mean, in what sense do you mean?
You'd have to take out, if you want to maintain power the way Abacha did, the way, I mean, I don't think, having experienced Tinubu, I don't think he's incapable of, I think he's actually quite capable of going down that, but he's older anyway, so who knows. But if you want to maintain power in Nigeria, you need to execute people on large scale. To keep people in line, keep people in check, put fear there, take out your enemies, and keep your...
But you know, if you go that route, trust me, there are also your enemies who have the capacity to match your violence with violence, you know. And of course, once you go down that road, you create a situation. You know, I would hate to see a coup d'etat in Nigeria. I really hate to see it, because Nigeria has not had a good experience with military regimes, nor have we had a good experience with quote-unquote democratic governments. But the more... you know, if Tinubu feels that he should, if he feels tempted to nest on to the use of violence to sustain himself, I think that all things are, you know, everything is up for grabs, because there are Nigerians and political parties that can actually go toe to toe with you and who have elements loyal to them in within institutions of the state itself, and even within the police and the military forces and so on. So, you know, I mean, hopefully, I don't hold up much hope that the Supreme Court is going to do the right thing, but who knows? I mean, some of us thought that this panel of appeal court justices were going to have a spine and recognize for once that life is not about what you put down in your gut. That sometimes, you know, you put away so much and you are mocked by the brevity of your life. Okay? And whatever you put aside, those who survive you can waste it in a quick Hollywood or Nollywood second. Okay? It takes just one or two rascally children that you have to squander some nest that you have built out of corruption, you know? And I'm not necessarily saying that these judges are corrupt, but I'm saying that the Nigerian judiciary is notorious for its corruption. And the kind of judgment that was given does not stood logic on its head. And it would be, one would be hard put to it to find its, what, you know, some other means of explaining this kind of judgment. Anyway, but you were talking about
violence and all. I don't know. I mean, you could keep a state like Nigeria with perpetual violence if you want. You obviously you'd be in a battle with other people, so we'll see how your skills will have to play out against their skills. I don't know how that ends up. I mean, at some point in time, that's the next step, really. If you succeed, you're going to have to. You're probably going to want to give in somewhere like Tinubu's antecedents. He still controls Lagos since 1999. So you probably might be one of those people. He's likely going to be one of those people that want to hold on to power till the day he dies and pass it on to his family. That's one option. You have all kinds of options. I don't, and I've said it plenty of times, in a case like Nigeria, I don't know why people are, in Africa especially, I don't know why people are so... what's the word I would use? They are so enamored by democracies, the version of democracies or the democracies they have in Africa. They are so infatuated by it. I don't really get it. Because all of it is all borrowed. And like Tomaso writes in his book very clearly, Nigeria is one of those countries that is trying to be the first country to just go and borrow a system and it works for you. It never does. You can't take somebody's thing, hook, line, and sinker, and put it on yourself and you think it's be a perfect fit. It's not going to be a perfect fit. Maybe it could be a better fit, but that's in nation building specifically. That doesn't happen. No. And history, or recorded history and record reality, just says otherwise. So I think people should be more infatuated in how they can or could get it right, what they need to do to get it right, what they want to start with. Because they come in with all these notions of freedom or, you know, as being the key. People should have these conversations in Africa. Is it factual? If with either this thing, it used to be there was a infactualization of people wanted coups at some point in time for the sake of power, and you know, they'll take out their friends in Africa, led by foreign forces, which is something that's well documented. Whether it's the CIA, the MI6, whichever one's well documented, even by their own agencies. Based on what they've released, so there's a lot of academic material, a lot of material on all those kind of things, and people kept power for the sake of it largely. Towards the end of the 80s and 90s and the Cold War, there was less of an incentive. So you have, even though you had the Rwanda crisis, you start having some people who seize power, who in Africa, who are already in power and start changing their tunes. People like Gaddafi changes his tune a lot more. Enriches, which, like, again, there are people who are dissidents from Libya, right? They're like, they wanted freedom. And and the West would say, well, oh, freedom and liberty should be the number one thing. I've never been on that boat that necessarily has to be the number one thing. So if there are people who are going to be exiled because they like to talk too much, so be it. If it meets the goal of the nation, to build a nation where things are working in that nation, then that's what those people want. That's the only thing. But you sit down and you find these guys in the 90s, that's where even the guys like Paul Kagame come in. And even though Paul Kagame is not building strong institutions, he does try to do certain things. He does try to... there's a lot of problems in Rwanda, right? If it was in the 90s, he would have killed them. I'm not going to pronounce his name, but the Nobel Prize winner, Paul, what they call him, he put in jail for a while and then he's finally released him now.
Yes.
Who is a Belgian citizen and U.S. green card holder. If it was in the 90s, he probably have executed him, but now he released them, right? So my whole thing is, the harder reality is, if you're looking at democracies in Africa, and it's not just the ones that have stayed for 40 years or the ones that they have handed over have acquired it from their fathers. It's not, or even, yeah, their fathers, but like Isabella de Santos and this thing actually acquired the economic might of Angola for a period in time.
Yeah.
Or my father as well. So it's not always that they are always in power, like Isabella de Santos, again, as an example. But it's that you look at these democracies and they're all faulty. They're all faulty. Whether there's a change, like in the case of Nigeria, it's just getting worse and worse. It's not working. You could make all kinds of arguments. You could sit down and say, hey, you know, in 4 years' time, it's going to be differences. We know now that there's no 25% in FCT and so on. And so we'll find out things from, but in 4 years' time, it's just going to be the same movie, just the worst version of it, if you're being honest with, but, you know, people want to go ahead and sit down and tell themselves that this you know, there's hope somewhere in the silver lining, short of the process begins to reform the system. I don't know what it is, right? It could be revolution, like Shorey. It could be a coup. It could be anything. I don't know. Not prescribing one course of action. I'm just saying this course of action is silly. The fantasization of this democracy thing that is going to be the solution is delusional. Like at this point in time, yeah. If you're still thinking this way, like, oh, no, this is just this, and the judges were, I could sit down for an hour and give you stories on judges just since 1999, which will even include family members and judgments they've given in Nigeria. So if this one is, yeah, people are feeling it a lot more, well, people have been feeling it a lot for decades, just from 99. I could go before that, but that would take me also talking about the framework of before that. But just from 99, this democratic dispensation, what the kind of rulings judges have given. I mean, when it came to the Imo one, that's when people just finally, just like, oh, you know, it's been going on for a long time. And the only reason why by 99 it was terrible, but it's now far worse than the terrible thing that it was back then, is that in 99 you still had a number of people from the bench who had been coming from the Inns of London.
Yes.
A lot of those guys were still... They still had
some self-respect.
They still had some apron strings to British high society, where they wouldn't want to be publicly seen. Now, I'm not saying these guys are like the pristine of morality, or so, you know, they're not the temple of morality or anything. I'm just saying that at least they have some, like you're saying, self-respect, right? They have some, at least publicly, you know, publicly going to go down that route. So you still had a lot of them. That's why during the military era of Abacha, you had court rulings and all those things, and people felt, but all those guys have long since left. They have all passed on, or at the best retired. The guys you have now, I mean, if you hadn't seen them before, I know I'm privileged to have been in close contact with the judiciary all my life. That was your first time watching Nigerian judges reading something. It's somebody reading something, and it sounds like my 5-year-old son, if you gave him that judgment, he would read a lot better. It's almost like you've never read a judgment in your life, but somehow, some way, you're at the top of the judiciary in Nigeria, literally at the top of the judiciary. You're either on the Supreme Court, you're just on the Court of Appeal. But you sound like somebody who has never encountered a legal question in your life.
Yeah, it's like somebody ran out to the street, found the first person and say, hey, come, there's a long document that needed to be read. You know, come and read it.
You sit down with these things, and these are the guys, these are the people who stand, it's widespread. You go, it's all of them. It's not even widespread, it's all of them. You go look at what are the ones they appoint now as this thing? I was a young lady that it's about my age that they appointed as a minister who schooled in the UK. I think it was Swansea or somewhere that she went to. And she didn't even care to do NYSC, even though she lives in Nigeria, right? Becomes, you know, that's the point. That's just the point. It's, if you feel there's a silver lining, I don't see any silver lining in the system, short of realizing that you need some change.
Oh, definitely.
And I'm happy a lot of people in Africa are seeing the exact thing I've been predicting. Like, you're going to have strong men. Some of them will fail them. Some of them will fail. Mm-hmm. But the law of numbers says that some of them will succeed in doing things better, creating institutions. Mm-hmm. You're better off if you start having these countries in Africa succeeding. At least there will be something to point to shame people. But Nigeria is better off with anything but this at this point. Nigeria is better off with anything but this. This is a waste of... have people in Nigeria who have been in political office for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You have somebody picking up pension from your local government, from as councillor, as chairman, as a speaker of the house, as a minister. Some of them are picking up pensions, insane monthly and yearly pensions, as ministers, as
former governors, for being now senators,
terrible mm-hmm. political office holders. Mm-hmm. And the state can't even pay its pension entitlement.
Yes.
It's not like it pays pension entitlements to people mm-hmm. that it's so much. It can't even pay
the minister
comparatively. But you have people that have wild pension and they're picking it up from mm-hmm. if people feel that this is how you build a country, let alone a nation. Mm. Well, good luck, man.
I tell you something. I mean, one has felt nothing but disgust, okay, for some time about political goings on in Nigeria. But at no time has one felt more disgusted than this very period. Because this is a time when Nigeria is in a particularly dire straits, okay? So you found a situation where Buhari, in the last few years of his administration, was essentially borrowing money to meet recurrent expenditures, okay? You can't get worse than that. It's like a parent borrowing money month after month to feed the family, you know, not for any capital obligations, not to fix something in your house, not to save for your children's education, but just to feed your children. So that's where Nigeria was. And then you find this man who obviously had no preparations for leadership, except feeling this egotistic sense that it was his turn to be president. After all, if he could make a man as rustic as Buhari president, as he boasted, why not himself? Okay. This guy takes over and is spreading money, okay, to the higher reaches of Nigeria's society, to legislators, to the judiciary, to political appointees, spreading money to them as if money was going out of style. Okay? Meanwhile, poor people are bemoaning the hardness of their lives, you know, with nobody paying attention. Okay? And you find a buffoon of a Senate president, okay, making fun of poor people. Your motion is that we should allow the poor breed, and so on. What an inane political class we have. What a most evil group of unconscionable, the most unconscionable subset of humans that we have right in our affairs, you know? And then you find a situation where things are so difficult. I was speaking with a friend recently, and he runs a department in one of the southeastern states. And he told me that he allows his staff now to come to work only twice and sometimes once a week. And he gave me the example of somebody who worked under him whose salary, a graduate, is 40,000 naira. And he said this guy, to come to work from his hometown to the state capital, he has to spend 3,000 naira coming and going every day. So he said, how could he tell somebody whose take-home pay is 40,000 naira to come to work, 40,000 naira in a month, how could he tell this person to come to work every day where he'll spend 3,000 naira? So he said, this man called him and said, sir, I can't do it. And he said, stay at home. So the very fabric, if you like, of our society is coming unglued. Okay? At every turn. And yet you find, some misconceived judgment coming from some judges who think that they are displaying erudition and thoroughness if they could give a marathon judgment for 12 hours. I can imagine them toasting themselves and saying, yeah, this one, and their friends will be patting them on the back. Oh, this was really a marathon one. It was a marathon shame. I mean, I can't be more contemptuous of what, I mean, how do you start making up excuses for INEC? Okay. INEC did not even argue that they didn't use the electronic transmission because it was subject to being hacked. You are inventing, you know, so it's like a very jejune kind of legal doctrine that we saw at play, where the judiciary saw itself as cheerleaders for people who rigged elections, for the beneficiaries of that rigging, and felt called upon to heap insult on the victims of these of INEC and of Tinubu and his political party. It was, you know, for me, there is no other way to put it. It was a sham verdict. It was a shameful verdict. It's not going to bring any credit to the five justices who signed on to this travesty. And that's all I want to say today. Yeah. Well, so we're so delighted that you all are able to join us. As I said at the very beginning, it's not a happy subject. It's not a subject where one could sugarcoat anything. What happened in Nigeria, what the judiciary did was going to go down in infamy. But I believe that ultimately the Nigerian people who have been much abused, that they are going to rise. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this episode, and we look forward to coming back to you shortly. Have a brilliant, brilliant rest of the week.